Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 380 for comics originally released on December 19th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman 66, The Lost Episode. Now, we reviewed the first issue of the Batman 66 series, correct?
Yes, we did.
And we've talked about the Batman 66 Green Hornet crossover, I believe.
Yep.
And now what we've got here is a Lost Episode. It was a story done by Harlan Ellison for the TV show that would have introduced Two-Face into the canon of that show. And this is a one-shot. It's a $9.99 one-shot. It's an 80-page comic. And at first, going into this, I was afraid, geez, this is going to take forever to read. It's only a 30-page story. But one of the things I loved about this is they also gave us the equivalent of a ton of DVD extras. We get the entire story with the raw pencils. And the art's by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, who is just a phenomenal penciler. And the script is by Len Wein, who just did a fantastic job adapting the story from Ellison. And they present, in a text piece, the original treatment for the story. So I was really impressed by how much, how they really went all out for this. And it's, can you see Two-Face, do you think he would have worked on the TV show?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. There's some crazy stuff that happened on the TV show that
true.
Worked.
I'm a split opinion on here. On the one hand, I can see him working great. On the other hand, I can also see where he really might not have fit in with the versions of Joker, Riddler, Penguin, Catwoman. I mean, the whole acid in the face and some of that aspect, there's an inherently darker tone to the character, at least his origin, that might have been a little too scary for young kids. And it was a primetime show. It wasn't aimed at kids, but it kind of was. So on the one hand, I could see where he would have fit perfectly. On the other hand, he might not have. It really comes down to, could they have nailed the execution? What would they have done for the makeup and stuff? I'm certain they could have made it work, but I could also see where it wasn't a slam dunk either.
Yeah, it would have been a softer, gentler Two-Face for sure.
You know, it's the Harvey Dent aspect, though, is part of why I think he would have been perfect for the show, because I can just see the Adam West Batman pining for, you know, his friend Harvey Dent and trying to get him back on, you know, the straight and narrow or what have you. And I just think that would have played so well. What did you think of the story?
Well, I was thinking we were going to have 80 pages of story to go through, and I was budgeting my time and said, okay, I'm going to read this on this day. This is the only thing I'm going to read because I need to be able to get through this whole thing in one sitting, and I want to make sure. And then it was all extras pretty much, and it was just a normal size story. So that was cool. And what I was really impressed by the guy's art, especially the pencils that they stuck in the back. Mm-hmm. And although I had already read the story, I think you could have just looked at the pencils and known exactly what was going on. You didn't really need any bubbles, you know, any text going on. And that's really the mark of a great artist, to be able to tell that story sequentially enough so that you know what's going on. And the pencils really pop, you know. You don't really need the color, and you don't really need the inks. It's beautifully done. And
how familiar are you, if at all, with the work of Jose Luis Garcia Lopez?
I saw he had done some Atari Force, and I remember that vaguely. So a few other things that, you know, I recognize. But no, I wasn't. I'm not really familiar with him, and he's a really, really great artist.
I think that may be a little bit reflective of me being maybe just enough older than you then, because he was one of those that late 70s, early 80s. I mean, he's had a long career. And he has been, I mean, first off, he's an amazing artist. He's got just a clean style. At one point, they were using him for a lot of the in-house kind of reference art or promotional art or stuff for licensed properties. He was, I don't say he was never the house style, but almost to a degree kind of the house artist. If you ever saw any of the DC Heroes role-playing game stuff from, I think it was Mayfair back in the 90s, I think it was, all their covers and stuff, for the most part, you know, had, not all their covers, but all of the stock images of you know, Superman, Wonder Woman, whatever, almost all of it was stuff by Garcia Lopez. And, of course, he's done a number of titles. You know, Atari Force is kind of a funny one because it was based not even on a particular video game, but just on Atari in general. And it ran for 20 issues, which, I mean, these days would be a long run. But it's funny to kind of reference that as one of his works. Because, yeah, he certainly did it, but he's done so much more, and I think has been a very influential artist on a number of other artists. This is one of the people I would put right up there with George Perez, quite possibly even above George Perez, in my estimation of quality. The two of them are just both astonishing artists. You know, again, the 30-page story and the additional 30 pages full size of the pencils. It was awesome. You could see the detail he put in, just the line work. Yeah, I can't speak enough about the quality of the art.
I actually think when you compare them, the art loses a bit with the coloring and the inks. It is actually a little better in pencil. I just think it gets a little covered up and washed out, and the detail gets a little lost, and the stuff that it's not there. You know, I don't know who did the inks and who did the colors on here, but you know, they missed a few things maybe, or covered up some of his line work because it's not as strong as the pencils in the back. And that was just a cool treat. That was really a cool treat to see and be able to compare and contrast like that. And you know, we get director's cuts, so we're used to seeing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think the pencils were a step above what the finished product was, and that's probably doesn't happen that often. And so I was really impressed with that. Overall, I thought the story was cool. It very much of that time. And yeah. I believe I may have said those exact words verbatim for the last two Batman 66s that we've reviewed. It does feel rooted in that. And, there's nothing wrong with this. This is a fine story and everything, but again, it's not the Batman comic that I really enjoy reading over and over again. So it's not going to pull me back into the Batman 66 comic itself, but I enjoyed this. I thought this was fun.
Well, it's interesting because the Batman TV show is both of its time, but almost surpasses its time in terms of just how pronounced it is with its personality, its style, its just way of being, if you will. And I think, you know, anything that comes out of it, of these comics, be it the original Batman 66 ongoing, the Green Hornet one, or certainly this, if it's not strongly evocative of that style and fitting there, and it's got such a signature style to it, we would have been disappointed. It's like, oh, they didn't quite capture it. But I can also see where if you want a more modern sensibility of Batman, this is not that. You know, what got me was how much they did deal with Two-Face's origin, because it's been a while since I've watched the old show, but it always felt like those characters just were. They didn't have origin stories, per se. I mean, obviously, somehow they became what they became, but that was never a focus of the show. Whereas you look at the animated series, certainly you look at Gotham, the whole thing is about how they become who they become. You know, and just I almost want to say the innocence and the freedom that the old show had of just, yep, he's the Joker. Nobody knows why. Nobody really cares. It's just nobody can imagine how his mind works. It's just so crazy and bizarre, you know? I got to imagine, was very liberating both for the writers and the actors. And with Two-Face, again, that's that you can't do Two-Face without his origin. And the whole shtick of the twos, the twins, the duo, all that kind of stuff, that would have played so well in the show as evidenced by this story. It was one of those that I would have liked to have seen them try to have filmed this. And I'm not entirely sure what caused it not to happen. I was doing a little research on the web, and one of the possible castings for the role, Clint Eastwood.
Huh.
Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Could have been interesting. This, to me, was timed really well with the release of the DVD and the Blu-ray sets. I liked how we got, you know, kind of the story that led up to it, the 30 pages of pencils, some behind the scenes stuff. It's just enough to really get almost the full treatment of the story in multiple ways. So to me, this did everything I expected out of the issue and then some. Would I have liked a longer story? Maybe, maybe not. This felt paced right for 2 half-hour episodes. To me, this was a 5 out of 5. They did exactly what I think they set out to do, or at least what I expected that they set out to do, and did it marvelously.
I liked it. I didn't like it that much, but I think it's a strong 4. And I enjoyed this. It was really nice. I think it could have came in at $7.99 instead of $9.99.
Fair point.
Seems a little expensive. It's you know, that's the price of an image trade, $9.99. So that seems a little high. But other than that, yeah, it's a great package. And for fans of any of the 66 comics that are out there, it's a no-brainer, of course. And I would say that even folks that haven't liked that, you can still check this out because it's really well executed and a really nice collection. And to see those pencils, those raw pencils, they look great. They just look great. And to see a little bit of the craft behind the story, and it was really a treat. So yeah, it's a strong 4 from me.
It's the kind of thing that makes me wish DC would really get on board with IDW and do some artist edition and stuff. And I think they may have done one or two, but this just shows how with the right artist, you see the raw pencils and it's just, wow. Inkers and colorists can add a lot to a book, but sometimes the penciler, yeah, they just don't need that. Shall we move on to our next book, the Marvel book, which is Spider-Woman #1?
Yes.
This is spinning out of the Spider-Verse stuff, and I will admit, I am really enjoying the main Spider-Verse storyline. Have not been impressed with the short story anthologies they've done in a couple of different titles. So I went into this a little hoping I'd like it, but a little, I don't want to say not skeptical, but wary.
And you had to have read Amazing Spider-Man first before this.
Yes. Very much so.
So
and that came out this week, too.
Yeah, so follow your checklist and make sure that you do, because it springboards into this.
Let's talk about checklists for just a moment. This obviously has one, but what Marvel has done in the past is they've got postcard kind of size checklists that they give out, and I don't recall, because normally I get a bunch of these in my DCBS shipments. I don't recall having gotten one for Spider-Verse, and I think they should have done that.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing one.
Because fortunately, I'd read things in the right order, but I would have been a little lost if I hadn't, and that would have annoyed me. Silk, the Jessica Drew Spider-Woman, good choices to lead this series. It's a 3-issue miniseries, right?
I think so, yes.
3 issues. There were a couple of things that surprised me a little by this issue. I'm not a fan of profanity in comics when it doesn't add anything to the story. There was one or two places where I felt the language that Silk in particular used neither added anything to the story, and also it just felt a little out of character from what we've seen of Silk.
Did not notice that.
When she's beating up kind of the Iron Man-ish kind of robot guy, there's some terminology in there. It's like it didn't offend me or whatever, it's just that struck me as an odd choice. And I know that there are some people that would have offended, and it's like, why? Why risk offending any part of an audience when you're trying to build an audience? The other thing that got me is not only do we have Silk and Jessica Drew, we've also got Spider-Man Noir in this. And when it spun out of the Spider-Verse storyline in Amazing, those three definitely off and going. And this is going to get a little spoilerish, but I think it's relevant enough that we kind of got to talk about it. By the end of this issue, the team of the three people we start with, Silk, Spider-Woman, Jessica Drew, and I'm going to clarify because we've got a lot of Spider-Women. In the Spider-Man Noir, by the end, that team is completely split up.
Yeah.
I get having an A plot and a B plot, and that makes sense with what's going on with Silk and what they set up here for Jessica Drew. But it's like, okay, it's like they had maybe a story conference. This is what they're doing for Amazing Spider-Man. this creative team gets in and says, you know what, let's go left instead of right or whatever. Let's swap out Spider-Man Noir for the Spider-Gwen and the Ariana Spider-Girl character. Okay, that swap out makes sense. The title is Spider-Woman. Both of those characters are Spider-Women of sorts, you know? Spider-Girl in one case, you know? But okay, that makes sense. I'm good with it. But why not just have done that from the Amazing Spider-Man issue that came out this week? And, you know, for that matter, I wouldn't mind the Julia Carpenter Spider-Woman showing up or the Maddie Franklin Spider-Woman. I mean, there's plenty of Spider-Women to choose from. Get them all in here. Maybe we'll see them in future issues. But to go with one team and then just kind of swap out midway through the first issue, it confused me a little. And then particularly taking Jessica, it's like, oh, she's got this secret mission she's going to go on. Okay, I'm presuming we're getting that here, but I was kind of under the impression she was the title character. So for half for the B plot or A plot, depending how you look at it, to be on Silk and not hanging around with the Jessica Drew Spider-Woman, I don't know, it seemed like a left turn I wasn't expecting. I don't object to it. I think it works. I think it works surprisingly well. I think this issue did well by all of the different Spider-Women, particularly Jessica Drew, but I think the other ones were portrayed well. Silk, maybe not so much. It just makes me wonder how cohesive of a game plan they had for some of this going in. What were your thoughts?
I really liked The Amazing Spider-Man, was it 10, that led into this?
Mm-hmm.
And like you, I think a lot of these other minis that have been around the Spider-Verse have really not worked as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Slott mentioned this in one of the early letters in the back pages or something about, you know, you can just read the main story and get everything you need. You don't have to do these side things, but it'll just add to your enjoyment. And I think that's the way you have to look at this, because if you're picking this up and not reading Spider-Man, you're not going to get any enjoyment out of this, I don't think. I think this is only as a supplemental title does this work at all, because it just doesn't seem strong enough to me as a debut, as a first issue, any of those things, those normal criteria, which is what it is. It is a first issue, but I think it falls flat in a lot of those areas. But I enjoy it a little more because I'm coming at it directly from the Amazing Spider-Man issue that came out.
Well,
and that helped prop it up, some of its shortcomings for me.
I think this is an interesting kind of a mini-series to do. And there's a spin-off mini-series to an event, kind of a genre almost. You know, we hit this with Infinite Crisis. We've hit this with many events here and there, where you've got these side stories creators want to tell or editorial wants told, take your pick, and they need to be inconsequential enough, i.e. not so pivotal that if you miss it, you're like, I don't get what happened in the main event, yet interesting enough that people do want to read them. So there's a fine line to walk between, I got to get a character from point A to point B. In the main story, it really doesn't matter how they do it, but I got to make it interesting enough that people would pick up the side story if they want to. So I think that kind of falls into place here. This is very much starting in the middle of an event, you know, so you're right. As a true first issue, it's not. Nor do I think it's set out to be. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I can see both. Because I can also see people who wanted to see Jessica Drew get her own book again.
Well, I think you can't really have that both. I think this has been announced as an ongoing series, not limited. Now, the Spider-Verse it is a limited, and I think the Scarlet Spiders might be a limited 3-issue, but I'm pretty sure that Spider-Woman was at least listed as an ongoing.
Was it? Okay.
Don't you have the bar a little higher for that, because it's not just an ancillary title for an event? You know what I mean?
No, I agree with you entirely. If it was pitched as an ongoing, and I'll be honest, I can't recall either way, then it ought to be a first issue that is accessible to everybody, whether they're reading the event or not. That's just good business, good storytelling. And you could argue that's even arguably more important with the miniseries. I think in no case could you argue a first issue should not be accessible to new readers. That's just a bad idea in general. But
I think it's a little more forgivable when it's something like Axis Revolution or something where you know it's right. It's just it's only there to support the event.
It's almost a junior title of the event, but it's clearly part of the event. Yeah, no, I agree with that. To me, the Spider-Verse team-up falls into that category.
Yes. Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of, yeah.
But with this one, with Scarlet Spiders, I expect there to be constant references to the big event. But if somebody was interested in just one of these characters, be it Jessica Drew, be it Silk, whoever, Jessica Drew is probably the better example, they should have been able to pick this up and skip Spider-Man. And I agree that maybe they can, but I don't think they'd be puzzled.
Yes.
With Silk, the only reason you'd be a fan of her is if you're reading Amazing Spider-Man right now. So I think that's kind of a moot point to argue there are big fans of her that aren't reading Spider-Man right now. If so, they got off really quick after she was introduced. I enjoyed this. I thought for the amount of characters we got, for the amount of story we got, and we got a fair amount. They're on a couple of different worlds. Multiple characters kind of come and go. The story moves along. It's hard to tell for me if some of this was planned, some of it was no, I've got a better idea, or if they're just zigging and zagging for the sake of zigging and zagging.
Yeah, I think it's a lot like when Scott Snyder will plot something and then have some writers, you go, okay, now go write it. You have to connect the dots A, B, and C. And I don't care how you get there. Just make sure that you get from A to B to C so that we hit the story beats that I need you to hit. And it kind of feels like maybe Slots just said, okay, you're going to go off and you can do whatever you want, but these people have to come back in one piece to finish my story. So have fun.
Did you feel this was just moving chess pieces on the board, or that it offered more than just that?
I didn't feel this matters at all. I don't think this matters at all.
Interesting. Okay.
No. It didn't feel like a real number one for the Spider-Woman as an ongoing title.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't feel like it was enough of a side quest to support the event. But all that being said, I'm liking the event itself enough that this was okay for me. And maybe the next couple will be, you know, before we finish up this event, maybe they'll be more enjoyable. But I thought this was okay, so I gave it a 3.
Interesting. Okay. For me, I got to agree. Was it the strongest first issues? Absolutely not. Should it have been? Yeah, probably. I do think they did a really good job here establishing the Jessica Drew character for people who are not reading, say, Secret Avengers or some of the other places she's been showing up lately. I think they gave a good showing of most of the characters. It was enjoyable. I liked the art. Greg Land, though, you know, give him a book full of women and you're going to have some good art. I mean, just go figure. Even if you do get a few references of, yes, this pose is kind of odd from one of the characters. I don't know. For me, this was, I felt a good adjunct to the Spider-Verse stuff. Is it critical reading? No. Is it seem relevant reading and rewarding reading? Yeah, I thought so. So for me, solid 4 out of 5, and it got me thinking that at some point I probably need to pick up the original Spider-Woman series from the late 70s and read that. I don't think I have those. I may have it in Essential. I need to dig around and go find out. It was at least much stronger than some of the short story anthologies we'd been getting for the Spider-Verse. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
This is X-O Manowar number 30. We introduce the Armorines. Before we go to the inside of the book, I have a question about the cover. Based on this cover, we've got X-O, we've got, presumably, the Armorines. How big do they look to you?
They're very small.
By very small, action figure size, perhaps smaller, Ant-Man size-ish?
Yes.
Okay. So it wasn't just my imagination. I look at this cover, I have those expectations. I read this issue, I don't have those expectations. Did you read the original X-O series from Valiant?
No, I didn't know.
Okay. What did you think of this issue?
I thought it was pretty good. It was a pretty good intro. This is a good jumping on point for folks, I think. And you have to fill in a little of the blanks yourself, but you get a good sense for who all the players are, and why it's important. And I thought it did a pretty good job of that.
Really? Okay. I think we have differing views on this one. This issue introduces the character of Philip Zahn and the Armorines. And from what you just said, you've got a good sense of who he is and why he's doing what he's doing.
Well, I pretty good, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, I couldn't take a quiz on the character right now, if that's what you're leading up to.
I was thinking about it, but no, I won't. I guess for me, I wasn't overly impressed with Philip Zahn as a major threat to either Exo or Eric, for that matter, without the armor. It just strikes me as they meet, Eric decks him, end of meeting. All we really know about this guy is he's cheating on his wife. He's not the nicest of guys. He's connected somehow to the Armorines, and that's about it. And while we see the Armorines in action, they're never clear. I guess they are clearly named as such. I don't know when and where they got their armor, who they are, really get to care much about them. And again, they're full size. I was expecting these little, micro-sized things from the cover. It wasn't a bad issue, but it seemed like it was only setting things up. I didn't think it set things up incredibly well. And the character of Philip Zahn and the Armorines is from the original Exo series in the 90s. It just seems like we're retreading what they've done before. Now, granted, different story notes, stuff like that. But it made me think this was more going through the motions versus charting new ground or putting a really great spin on old classic stuff or something. It felt like a chapter of a story and not the most robust of chapters to me.
Yeah, I think I did like it a little better than you did.
I would say you probably liked it a lot better than I did. I didn't hate it, though. It had some interesting stuff. I thought we got some good stuff for Eric and whatnot. It just, the pacing felt a little sluggish. I wanted more out of this.
Yeah, I thought Zahn was a good bad guy, and Secretary was really interesting. Their time together, that was nice. I liked the stuff with Eric and his lady and there in the winter area. I thought that was kind of cool, and I liked a lot of this stuff. Now I treated it like, here's the players, and here's a little bit about what makes them tick and what their characters are. And I thought I got a good sense for that. Now, as far as the Armorines and the overarching what this is going to be in trade down the road, what this story is really going to be about, I don't really have a sense for that.
Okay.
So in that case, sure, it may have fallen flat. But as far as characters concerned, I thought I got a really good introduction to the main folks in here, who they all are and why they're important to each other. And I'll take that. I'll take that because I don't get that in a lot of introductory issues in comics anymore.
That's a fair point. In terms of this being a jumping on issue, do you think somebody who was not reading Exo, who was told this was a good, jumping on point and read this, do you think they would come out of this hooked on the title, interested enough to come back?
Yes, I do. I think there's enough here to pique your interest, and there's enough character stuff here that you can get a sense for, these are characters that I want to root for and root against. And I'm getting a sense for what his powers are, what he can do, whether I want to be in another shared universe, and like go in all in on it. I don't know about that. But as far as this title, I thought it did enough to say, hey, you're a new reader. Here's our guy. What do you think of him? And come back and learn more. And I thought it did a good job of that. And so, it got to the fore for me.
I think for me, it suffered in comparison to what I've read before of Exo. This is not the first incarnation of Exo I've read. I think it's like at least the third. I hear what you're saying. I don't disagree with any of it. I think you're right. There's probably more in there than I give it credit for. It was less than I was hoping for out of the issue, but I think that's as much. I think that's the baggage I bring into the title with my familiarity of Valiant and what's gone before. I mean, having read the Armorines title back in the day, I it's not a new concept. It's not new and unexplored for me. So I was hoping they'd maybe just move along a little faster.
Then that seems totally fair. You know, you've been there, so yeah, you don't need that. It felt like a nice intro issue for a new reader.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, it wouldn't be able to do both things. Some of them can, but
pleasing new readers and long-term readers, particularly in this sort of a case where they're retreading old ground or whatever, I think it's unlikely to please both sides. You either hit the nostalgia thing for the old readers and new readers are like, but what's going on? Or the flip side of that. You know, I had this issue at one point with some of the Legion of Superheroes stuff when they were kind of retelling the Great Darkness saga and some other things. Fun stories, but I kind of knew not necessarily what was coming, but what could be coming because of what I'd read before.
Yeah, and Valiant as a whole, it's tough to, you know, they none of their titles, I don't think, are over in double digits in sales. I think they're all under 10,000. And it's a tough slog for them because they have the shared universe. And, you know, I imagine that most folks that want the shared universe, they've got the big two to choose from, you know, and these read some of these issues and some of these different comics that we've reviewed from them. They kind of read like a creator-owned Image comic, but yet they're also the big shared universe. And I don't know if those things work hand in hand. I never really get my mind around why these don't catch on, because they all seem pretty well written and well drawn, and they're all above average comics, almost all of them.
I would agree. They're very much well written, well drawn, and above average. But I think you hit the nail on the head with they've got the shared universe aspect, which harkens towards a DC and Marvel-ish universe. Yet they've also got almost a bit of a sensibility of creator-owned, independent, you know, non-shared universe title aspect to them. And that puts it into a really bizarre, neither fish nor fowl kind of an area for a lot of people, myself included. It's like, are we doing shared universe? Is it just kind of him off on his own? Is it not? And it's like, yes, there's clearly a shared universe, no question about that. But they're trying to play up the differences between the titles and make people not feel they've got to go in whole hog, which I think is a smart move. But the other thing I'm struggling with Valiant right now is none of their titles, I mean, they're rotating through titles. We've talked about that recently with one or two of their other things, I think. Or maybe I talked about it with Sam on the Mayo report. XO, the Zero issue sold over 11,000. This title's actually been usually been doing above 11,000. It's only dropped below it twice. And it's one of their better selling titles. But I think between stopping some of their ongoings, retitling them, or flipping them into a miniseries to then relaunch them, they're getting a constant, set of number ones coming out and stuff, and treating it as a series of miniseries. But it's also making it, just from my vantage point, as somebody who is pretty much all in, hard to keep track of what's coming out. Is this title over? Is it not? Is it coming back? What's going on? I think they've kind of put themselves into a really bizarre situation where they've got some really great material, but it's hard for people to keep track of it and hard for them to, I don't say pigeonhole it, but to narrow it down in their mind as to what it is and what it's not. That makes sense?
Yeah, I think so. And that's what I struggle with. I think they would be better served to not have the shared universe. But then, you know, they do lose out on, there are folks like you that are all in and enjoy the crossover events and things between all the titles that you're reading. So, you know, there's a built-in audience there. But it's a tough nut to crack. It really is. I don't know if you can have your foot in on both sides and have your cake and eat it too and all that. There's something there that's keeping it from taking that next step forward sales-wise.
Yeah, I think that they've got better material than their sales indicate.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've probably at least half a dozen titles, maybe more, since I've come on. And, you know, besides Unity, I think I've liked them all. And some have been really, really impressed. I've been really, really impressed with. And well, have I stuck with them, though? And I haven't. I haven't really stuck with them. There's just something that doesn't keep me on those titles for long term, and I don't know what it is.
Well, they're also not EXO being the exception, they're not blatantly superhero titles for the most part. They're adventurer titles, but Archer and Armstrong, definitely not superheroes. Quantum and Woody, yes, there's the costumes, but they're not standard superheroes. You know,
they have superpowers, right?
Well, even EXO has armor, but he's not a superhero per se. He's a modern-day warrior. There's a different sensibility, I guess, around these characters than your average Justice League or Avenger, X-Men, Titan, or, you know, whatever. They're not fighting the good fight for the sake of doing so. You know, they're thrust into situations. They're either spies, mercenaries, or, you know, whatever. And that leads to different kinds of stories. And I think telling different kinds of stories is a smart move for Valiant. But I think Valiant really needs to somehow crystallize their identity better. And I think if they can figure out whatever that missing ingredient is and kind of hone in on that and leverage it, they could do really well. I mean, these properties have shown back in the 90s that they can be top-notch properties. And they're top-notch now. They just don't have the sales that reflect that.
And most things don't. Most things don't have the sales anymore.
Fair point.
So I can't really fault them just because of that. But yeah, I think it's a strong line. And by and large, most of the titles are a lot stronger than they're selling.
Yeah. I want to see Valiant succeed because they're putting out good stuff. They're going about things, I think, the right way. I just think it's a tough market.
Yeah.
So how is it that we've decided that we were going to record early this week and I got like 60 items this week?
I don't know.
Do you just look at my pull list ahead of time, Drew, and say, he's going to have too much to read? Let's go. No, I mean, it's Thanksgiving this time, which is why we're recording early this time. But I had like 60 items this week. Normally I've got a small comic book box top that I just put all my comics in. I had to get another one this week because it wouldn't fit in one. It was just a crazy big week. I've gotten through all of it except for the Teen Titans Earth 1 hardcover that came out. Ton of great stuff this week. There were one or two things, though, that I read and I'm like, rub me the wrong way. And it was some of the Marvel stuff, actually, where they had, I think it was Avengers World, where they're kind of assembling a new team to go fight one of the existing teams, because, well, that's all the Avengers seem to do is fight each other. And one of the people they bring in, I'm like, wait a sec, he can't be in action in that suit and stuff. He's not in that kind of shape. I mean, they bring out the U.S. agent, where last I looked, be it in Thunderbolts or whatever, he was crippled, missing an arm. I mean, he was John Walker was not in fighting shape. So maybe this isn't that U.S. agent. Maybe it's somebody else. It just didn't feel that way. And man, the minute I hit something like that on a title where I think the writers, the editors, they just aren't up on their own universe, that really does not put a book in a good position for me. And it doesn't happen all that often, but it happens often enough to annoy me. But, I mean, we got another Astro City. We talked a little about the Amazing Spider-Man stuff with the Spider-Verse. Excellent issues there. The Avengers issue was great. Got the last issue, the Batman 66 meets Green Hornet. I thought that ended on a really strong note. Did you finish that series up, or did you?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. I might pick it up in trade.
Yeah, fair point.
Was it good?
I liked it. I don't know that it needed to be a six-issue miniseries. It played out and justified the length, but, I mean, we just read how they could do something in 30 pages that was a good two-episode kind of a thing. So they didn't need to keep going back and forth with the Joker and Professor Gum on that stuff. Or not Professor Gum, General Gum or whatever. What else did we get? We got Daredevil, another great issue. Another great issue of Doberman, Fables. Really strong issue of Fantastic Four. I think they picked up my thought that the red costumes were part of their woes. Got rid of that, which I think was a smart move. Just a lot of 4 out of 5s for me this week. I was very happy with that. How about you? What all did you read?
You know, you'd hit on the stuff that I liked. I liked Amazing. I liked Astro City. Daredevil was pretty good. Doberman was pretty good. I thought that was all right. Yeah, I had a rough week. My week was not as strong as yours. I thought Justice League was all right. Magneto was all right. Loki was okay.
I liked Loki a lot. Magneto was just okay.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Multiversity Pax Americana?
You know, I didn't read that one yet. I have to be in the right state of mind. I have to have my Who's Who out. I got to have my wiki pages up so that I can follow along and figure out exactly what's going on. Because usually it's just like way dense and too many Easter eggs for me. So I've been kind of pushing these back a little bit. I haven't really been in the mood to read any of the Multiversity stuff.
Frank Quitely on the art on this one. So we get some of those pages where, like, we got in All-Star Superman, where they're like walking down a staircase and you get the zigzag kind of a,
yeah,
just some of the layouts and the flow that Morrison and Quitely can do. Just amazing. They did some interesting things there. A few things of which it's like, I may need to reread this one just to make sure I kind of caught what they were putting down on the page.
Yeah, and if you're going through that, yeah, I'm going to be I'm going to be in the weeds.
For me, it's less who are these characters, but that what are they visually trying to convey on this page with how they're doing things. Because they're not being limited to just here's a standard 9-panel grid or standard way of doing things. They were playing around with the storytelling form a bit, which again that team tends to do from time to time. Did you read Wonder Woman? Got the new creative team.
I haven't read that one yet. How was it?
I liked it. We finally get to see the Justice League in that title, which we haven't for the last, you know, I don't know, 3 years. So it definite change of pace there, but I think I think it was a good one.
What did you think of the last run with Cliff Chang and with Azzarello?
On the one hand, I liked it. On the other hand, it felt so disconnected from the rest of the DC universe that it didn't rub me the wrong way. It just felt kind of off on the side. You know, Chang's art, amazing. Great stuff. Yeah. The way the gods looked, very cool. The story, though, just never totally connected with me on a level I wanted it to. And it didn't get any of the benefits of a shared universe title in so much as it was almost ignoring the rest of the universe. So I was always just a little bit frustrated with that title. I think they did a great run, don't get me wrong. But in my personal estimation of runs on Wonder Woman, certainly not in the top five, although I could definitely see where other people would put it there. But for me, it would be competing against the George Perez run, the Greg Rucka run, and there have been a couple of other runs that I just really enjoyed on the title. So.
I'm anxious to see how this stacks up sales-wise. I mean, I think this the previous run was very well received critically.
Yes,
and folks really liked it, and it was something that was, you know, a buzz title for DC, and they didn't have a lot. They haven't had a lot of those titles for a while, so I feel bad that they're losing that aspect, that they kind of need a little bit of cachet there. So hopefully this really takes off, but I'd be curious to see how this sells and to see where it goes.
35 sold under 36,000.
Yeah.
So sales wise, it definitely has room to go up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we're also at the point where coming out of the Futures End break, we've gotten essentially new starts on a couple of titles, Batwoman, Batgirl, now here, that kind of, it, for all intents and purposes, may as well be new volumes of the titles. You know, it's, I think DC is still either struggling to find the new take on some of these characters or just letting things play out until it's time to rinse, repeat, and go again. And as a long-term fan, I prefer a sense of a long-term continuity versus what feels like, and I know they don't mean it this way, of, well, that didn't work, let's scrap it and try something else. And I'm getting a little frustrated with DC, where they're doing some name dropping, almost for the sake of doing so. We got some of that in Batwoman this week, with the Demon and such. And we're getting some of that over in New Suicide Squad with Vic Sage. It's like they're taunting long-term readers. Ooh, they'll recognize this name. Let's see if we can sucker him in for a few issues. And again, I know that's not what they're trying to do, but it feels that way at times.
And again, you know, here's another place where It would have made sense, I think, to give Wonder Woman a number one, give it a sales goose, get it a little bit more media attention, maybe a few more on the shelves at comic shops. And they didn't do that. And I still have trouble wrapping my mind around their decision-making process. Oh, okay, well, this was a launch title. Maybe that's has something to do with it. They don't want to renumber that, you know, but then with the Teen Titans and the Suicide Squad, renumbering them for a lot less of a creative switch, I still don't get it. Still don't get it, and I don't know why they make some of the decisions they make.
I agree. I'm puzzled by that, too. I think Wonder Woman certainly was a big enough change to that a number one would not have been out of the question. I'm not sure. I think they should have done that, but I think they're also in a position where if they do too many, if they renumber too many of the titles, it's like, well, they're just following Marvel. You know, there's almost a face-saving aspect to it at times. And I'd, again, on the one hand, I'd rather see the numbers just consecutively tick up. On the other hand, that's realistically, that's not the market we're in.
And you know, I would be right there with you if we didn't have Teen Titans and Suicide Squad right there a few months ago, where they did something just the other way.
But yes, I don't think those should have been renumbered. It's like when Wade gets off of Daredevil. We're going to.
That was ridiculous. Yeah, ridiculous.
Well, we're going to get another new number one when that happens. You know, it's with Marvel, it's a major creative team change. Boom, new volume. DC, not so much, but they do it at times. And I don't know what rationale either company is using for that. And I'm also not certain what rationale I think ought to be used for one to do a new volume. But I have always been of the mindset, even though I don't think it's the right necessarily business decision sales-wise, but I think it's the right publishing decision. You start with an issue number one, then two, then three, and then keep numbering. Come hell or high water, you keep the numbering. You know, if you're completely rebooting and it is a cut the cord new title, okay, that's fine. But that's you could argue the same thing. Why reboot, or not reboot, but relaunch Injustice a couple of times? You know, what they're doing with some of their other digital first titles with Smallville Season 11 going through a series of mini-series.
Yeah.
You know, number one sell, at least better than the previous higher number does, but, I mean, it all comes out in the wash.
I've really enjoyed their digital first stuff, though. It's been pretty strong, I think.
I think it's been great. I've been loving Smallville. The Infinite Crisis stuff is actually a lot of fun. Injustice is great. What other digital titles are they doing these days?
I think Flash and Arrow are both good.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Superman title is good.
Have they continued that? Is that still going, or did they stop that one?
I could be behind. Sensational Wonder Woman, I think, is still going on. It's good.
I've got mixed feelings about that one. We got another issue of that in print this week, and there was one story I really liked, and the lead story I really did not like. So to me, it's all over the map in art style, in storytelling structure, everything. And if they would do better of grouping like to like, if all of one issue was something that's like, yeah, I just didn't care for that. Okay, great. Maybe the next issue I'll love. But as it is, I come out of it thinking, well, this was a mixed bag. And, you know, then you look at the price tag for it and that doesn't help it. I think it's got to do better digitally because you're buying in smaller increments.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. All in all, good week. It was just a big week for me. And like I said, I've still got that hardcover to read.
All in all, not such a great week for me, but next week will be great. So it doesn't last long. I always have some good weeks. So
I was going to say, that's the great thing about comics. Even if it's really a bad week, just give another 7 days. You'll get more comics.
It's the worst week ever, but you know what? Tomorrow's Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I'm excited. Well, I'll just start all over. Clean slate. And I believe we have time for clips, right?
That's
true. By
the
time this airs?
Yes. Thanks for reminding me. I'd almost totally forgotten. Clips are going to be due on December 6th, that Saturday morning, the 6th. Basically, as soon as I get up and decide to start working on the episode, that's when they're due. So, you know, earlier the better, but keep in mind, I'm lazy. I sleep late. Not lazy. I just don't really want to edit these episodes. They take so long. No, these are actually fun ones to do with the preview spotlight because I've gone through the advanced solicits. I've figured out what my picks are going to be. I've still got to record those. I'm figuring I'll wait till my next shipment comes in with the actual previews. That always kind of helps me a little. But I love hearing what other people are excited about, interested in, and recommend. I mean, that's how I get on board with a lot of new titles and stuff here and there. There have been a couple where the pitch, frankly, in previews just isn't enough to get me going either way. A good example of that is the King miniseries stuff over at Dynamite with Flash Gordon, Phantom, Mandrake the Magician, a couple others. I found those solicits to be uninformative at best. That's the kind of thing where a really good clip of, hey, I'm excited about this because, man, that could get me to buy some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully it gets other people to find stuff that they're liking. Because to me, the best thing is for you not to have one of these, this week wasn't so great, but man, everything I got, I love. You know, there's enough comics out there, and maybe not in any given week, but just in general, that you ought to be able to find a winner every week, I would hope. Depending, again, how often certain books come out, yada yada, your mileage may vary. But yeah, time for the new clips. Like I said, December 6th, this coming Saturday when this airs, that's when they're due. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That'll do it for me.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Gotham by Midnight number 1 from DC, Scarlet Spiders number 1 from Marvel, and Letter 44 number 12 from Oni Press. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.